Translation. Lord Ramachandra said to Ravana, "You are the most abominable of the man-eaters. Indeed, you are like their stool. You resemble a dog, for a dog steals eatables from the kitchen in the absence of the householder. In my absence, you kidnapped my wife Sita Devi. Therefore, as Yamaraj punished a sinful man, I shall also punish you. You are most abominable, sinful and shameless. Today, therefore, I, whose attempt never fails, shall punish you." Purport. Nacha Devat Parambalam. No one can surpass the strength of the transcendence. Ravana was so sinful and shameless that he did not know what the result would be of kidnapping Mother Sita, the pleasure potency of Ramachandra. This is the disqualification of the Rakshasas. Asatyam apratistam te jagat aru aniswaram. The Rakshasas are unaware that the Supreme Lord is the ruler of the creation. They think that everything has come about by chance or accident and that there is no ruler, king or controller. Therefore, the Rakshasas act independently, as they like, going even so far as to kidnap the goddess of fortune. This policy of Ravana's is extremely dangerous for the materialist. Indeed, it brings ruin to the materialistic civilization. Nonetheless, because atheists are Rakshasas, they dare to do things that are most abominable, and thus they are punished without fail. Religion consists of the orders of the Supreme Lord, and one who carries out these orders is religious. One who fails to carry out the Lord's order is irreligious, and he is to be punished. Om Jnani Timanandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Shakshurin Vinitanyana Tasmai Si Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swaparantikam Vandeham Si Guru Si Yutapada Kamalam Si Gurum Vaisnavamsta Si Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ranganatam Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Si Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sivisakam Vitamsta He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Hina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Visabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadada Sivasami Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is here displaying his personality. No. He's angry. He's not a great, aloof, transcendental personality who merely punishes the living beings because they need to be rectified of their sinful activities and tendencies, and therefore the Lord, in an aloof way, is punishing them. No. He's angry, extremely angry, very personally involved. Ravana is outrageous, and here the Lord lets him know, you are the most abominable of the man-eaters. Indeed, you are like their stool. You resemble a dog. I mean, he is getting into it. Therefore, as Srila Prabhupada wrote, in personal calamity, thou hast moved. Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved. Absolute is sentient. The Lord has a heart. The Lord has feelings. And that is something amazing. That the unlimited, all-powerful, supreme personality of Godhead has feeling and is exchanging these feelings with tiny, insignificant creatures like ourselves. That is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Lord Ramachandra is almost Krishna. When Lord Ramachandra comes into this world, he is unlike the other avatars, also like Krishna, performing extensive pastimes. For example, other avatars, other incarnations like Lord Nrisimhadev, they appear for a particular purpose, a particular pastime, and then it's over. Lord Nrisimhadev comes out of the pillar, and as we see on the painting in the corner there, rips open the abdomen and so on of Hiranyakasipu. It's a full-on painting, depicting it very well. But then afterwards, not so much more, not lengthy, extensive, many, many pastimes. But Krishna is performing so many pastimes, so many. And Lord Ramachandra also, and the Ramayana is quite a story. It's not just, and then he did this, and then he did that, and that was it. No, extensive. So, in this way, so Lord Ramachandra is especially important amongst all the incarnations of the Lord, amongst the Dasa avatars. Lord Ramachandra is very important because Lord Ramachandra is intricately getting involved with the human beings. Intricately. He's intricately showing so many aspects of Dharma. So many details by all these pastimes. And all these details are actually imprinted upon the mind of those who get absorbed in the Ramayana. And how Lord Ramachandra is placing Dharma before anything, and as such is always setting the perfect example. Of course, in the case of Ravana, that's pretty obvious and pretty clear, and he fought with Ravana a fair fight. But then we have the case of Bali, and that is kind of astonishing, because you see, when Sita was kidnapped, we remember there was Jatayu, and Jatayu fought with Ravana, but eventually the wings were cut and Jatayu crushed to the ground. But before dying, Jatayu was able to mention that Sita had gone to the south. So Lord Ramachandra went to the south, and then there was that meeting that took place with Hanuman. Hanuman was in disguise, and Hanuman was speaking very cultured, and he was glorifying Lord Ramachandra, and speaking at a very pleasing tone, even, it said. He even spoke on the right note. There was a particular note, not too high, not too low, but the right note. So Hanuman was so cultured. And then Lakshman spoke in response. And Lakshman explained, yes, this is Ramachandra, he is the Yuvaraj, the crown prince in the Raghu dynasty. And I am his servant. So Lakshman took a very humble position. And then Hanuman arranged that a pact was brought about between Lord Ramachandra and Sugriva. And in exchange, Sugriva would help to find Sita with his monkey army, and Ramachandra would take care of Bali. Bali was the great enemy of Sugriva. And Bali would come every day. There was a place where Sugriva could not go because of a curse. If he would go there, he would die. So Sugriva was hiding in this place from Bali. And Bali would come, would fly in the sky every day, and would not touch the ground of that place, but would kick the head of Sugriva and then fly out on the other side. That was his daily pastime. So in that way, Sugriva, it was getting a real headache for Sugriva. And therefore, something had to be done. So Lord Ramachandra agreed to take care of the situation. And what he did is he hid behind a tree. And then Bali came to kick Sugriva. And then from behind the tree, he shot him. He just shot him with an arrow. And Bali is lying there on the ground, mortally injured. And Lord Ramachandra came forward and stood there, and Bali said, "What kind? Now we see. Now we see the truth coming out, right? Instead of challenging me for an open fight, you hid like a coward behind a tree and shot me from an ambush. What kind of hero are you? Are you the personification of Dharma?" Like this. And then Lord Ramachandra explained. He said, "Look, Bali, look, you are a very sinful personality. You are every day harassing your brother who's innocent, right? And you're just harassing him. And he said, "Bali, who are you? You're saying I should have challenged you to an open fight? But you are not a Kshatriya. You are not a noble Kshatriya. You are a mere animal." And an animal, the Kshatriyas, they go in hiding and shoot the animals from a place in hiding. So, what was wrong? How did I transgress Dharma? And then it began to dawn upon Bali, yes, I am sinful, I am an animal. And he was satisfied and left his body in that way. And the reputation of Lord Ramachandra as the upholder of Dharma remained intact. But then comes the situation, Ravana is killed, and it's a whole thing. And that will happen tomorrow, and it's a whole dramatic scene, and we're getting close to it. But then after that, what happens is just something else. Sita is brought forward. Sita is brought forward before Lord Ramachandra, and they're reunited after all the trouble. And then Lord Ramachandra said, "Very good, Sita. You are free now. You are free to go." I mean, free. This is the drama, right? This is the part. Anyway, Sita is free to go because she stayed in the house of another man. But then we know that actually, then Sita goes, is ready to go into the fire to prove her chastity, and if she comes out unharmed, that will prove her purity. So Sita goes in the fire and comes out unharmed. Of course, we know that when Ravana was coming and tried to take Sita, that Sita actually jumped in the fire. She jumped in the fire then, right? Because she could not think that this Rakshasa might defile her body. So she just jumped in the fire. But she didn't, with the idea, I'd rather give up my life. But the fire god gave her shelter and manifested a Maya Sita, a false Sita. That was the one that was kidnapped by Ravana. And then that Maya Sita then at the end of the pastime jumped into the fire and the pure Sita came out. So then Lord Ramachandra accepted her back and they flew back to Ayodhya, and it was such a nice thing, and all the citizens put out lamps to celebrate, and you know, and they were like so happily there in the palace, and you know, like love, sweet love. And next moment Ramachandra, doing his duty as a king, goes into disguise and comes across this low-class man who has an argument with his wife and says, No, you're not coming back in. No way. You spent the night in another man's house, and there's no question that you ever come back in. I'm not like Ramachandra, you know, who took his wife back. No question. I'm following Dharma. I will not take you back. And when Ramachandra heard that, his heart shattered and broke into 1,000 pieces. And then, in the name of Dharma, all-devouring Dharma, in the name of Dharma, he just banned Sita and sent her away, although she was even expecting at the time. The Ramayana is too much. It's too much. This dharma is just too much. You know, I mean, then we have Krishna, right? You know, he promises he will not take up any weapons, scouts honor, you know what I mean? Absolutely, no, I shall not fight, you know, no, scouts honor. But then, you know, in the middle of the battlefield, then you see what happens. You know, Bhishma, who of course the best fighter, gives a bit of trouble to Arjuna's friend, you know, and to Krishna's friend, Arjuna. And what do you see? Immediately, you know, he abolishes his promise, just like that, takes up the wheel, storms at Bhishma, is ready to kill him. Just see, broke his promise just like that. Ho ho. Therefore, Kuntiya Pratijani hi nami bhaktya pranasyati, declared boldly, Arjuna, that my devotee will never perish. Why, Arjuna? Because nobody will believe Krishna. Say the acharyas. You know, everybody knows Krishna is a liar. But Arjuna, yes, he is honest. He has honor. You know, he's a man of his word. Remember that time when Arjuna was ready to enter the fire because Mahavishnu was stealing the children of the Brahmana? And Arjuna was the protector and said, if I cannot protect, you know, then I will enter the fire. So that's Arjuna, man of his word. Yeah, so this dharma is for this world. The principles of dharma are for this world. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes to show how to live in this world, then he displays the principles of dharma. But when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes to show what it's like in the spiritual world, then he breaks all the rules of dharma, because his devotee is more important to him even than his own reputation, even than dharma. He's ready to put his devotee before anything, and that is Krishna. Bhaktavatsala, the one who places the devotee before anything and who just is ready to fully dedicate himself to his devotee. It's that Krishna even takes the form that his devotee desires. Krishna is known as Daksha, one who is expert. He's expert, and Krishna was fulfilling different purposes at the same time. So as he was breaking his promise to show that he was even transcendental to dharma, he was also reciprocating with his devotee. Bhishma, who had this viraras, this relationship of chivalry with Krishna, and who was fighting with him, shooting arrows at him, and the arrows were making wounds on the body of Krishna. And this was like offerings of flowers, you know, like in the mood of Bhishma Dev, right? So how amazing, and that Krishna just reciprocates and takes that form that his devotee desires. How the Lord becomes controlled by the desire of his devotee, that is Krishna. And that is why there are so many forms of the Lord to reciprocate with the devotees who have different moods. Therefore, devotees of Krishna, they have a different mood than the devotees of Ram, right? The devotees of Ram are very strict about Dharma, and the devotees of Krishna, you know, they lie sometimes, right? As long as it's for Krishna, right? For Krishna, no problem, you know. Yeah, sure, yeah. We can lie. Although we see even that illustrated in that pastime with Yudhisthira, who was asked to lie. Yudhisthira was such a saintly person that he just never in his life spoke a lie. I mean, which is sort of extraordinary, to say the least. Never spoke a lie in his life, and therefore his chariot never touched the ground, just like the demigods, who don't touch the ground, who float above the ground, and the dust never settles on their body. So in this way, Yudhisthira had that benediction. But then he was asked to lie, and he couldn't. Aswatthama is dead. No, I can't say that. All right. Here's an elephant, Aswatthama. Just say Aswatthama, the elephant is dead. Aswatthama, the elephant is dead. Just blew a conch at that time and just see. And Yudhisthira felt so bad. Because although in a way it was not a lie, it was a lie because it was implying something else. So even that was too much for him. Right? You know, like implying something else and in this way fooling Dronacharya. Yudhisthira had big problems with it. And he had some hesitation about the whole thing and even after felt guilty. And then his chariot touched the ground and then Yudhisthira fell. Just see, I got the reaction. It was a lie. And so he had this doubt. But then at the end of his life, he had to see. He had to go to hell. And he saw that all his brothers were there. Which was not a fact. But it was his hell to see that. To see his brothers in hell who were not in hell. But he saw it. That was his hell. For a moment of hesitance, he had to for a moment to go there. To show that the devotee's morality is not mundane morality. The devotee's morality is to somehow or other please Krishna. In the name of that, many things have been done. In Amsterdam, our Dhananjaya had a temple. He was the temple president of a temple in a flat, and they were doing the ritual with the spices and so on and the chants, and it went into the air vent system, and within no time people were fumigated in the building and the extraterrestrials were thrown out. So they were on the street and then they couldn't find a place, and Prabhupada was coming, so finally they found this place, a storage for vegetables. It didn't even have a floor. It just had street tiles. So then they went to this construction site and started loading up wood for Krishna, you know, and to make a floor in the temple. And as they were going for a second load, they saw that blue light of the police, And the police are always like, all right, what's going on? You know, all right, what? And as the police came, Dhananjaya told the devotees, the Super Soul inspired him, and he told the devotees, just start unloading all the wood and put it all on the side. And the police said, all right, what's going on? What's going on? Officers, we are monks and we needed some wood for our monastery and we were taking it, but then we realized that God will not be pleased by this and therefore we decided to put it back. And they were putting it back and the police said, all right, put it all back and don't let it happen again, you know. And the cops left and Dhananjaya said, okay, start loading the van. So this transcendental morality was certainly very much there in the early days of this movement. But sometimes it got a bit too transcendental, you know what I mean? When they start to tell Prabhupada how the collection in Japan was going on for the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and that sometimes they would ask for receipts, and that or they would offer people a receipt, and then they'd say, "Oh, can I borrow your pen?" And they'd get all these businessmen with expensive pens, and it's like, "Okay, gave the receipt and pocket the pen," and that way the collection went up. Well, no, all those things. Prabhupada said, "Oh no, I didn't know that." Because the reputation of Krishna's devotees is essential. And a devotee is naturally honest. Naturally honest. He is detached. He's not. Dishonesty is a sign of material attachment. It is a sign where we think, you know, I have to be the controller. I mean, this situation's getting out of hand, you know. I'm not getting what I need here, and this rule of Dharma is blocking the way, you know, and this honesty is in the way, and now, you know, only a lie can save me, you know. It means we want to be the controller. It means we want to bring this situation in our grip so that we, you know, get the advantages. It means we have a fruitive intent. It means we are calculating for our gain. It means we think, I am the controller of this universe and I need to make the arrangements to put everything in the right place so that everything is comfortable for me. So this lack of reliance on the Supreme Lord and knowing Krishna will provide, Krishna will take care, that's not there. Therefore, a Vaishnava will naturally take shelter of honesty. He doesn't take shelter of manipulation and lying and scheming and all kinds of ways, you know, to get the cash for Krishna. No, it's all selfless for Krishna, yes. But because a Vaishnava is knowing that I'm not a controller, I simply try, Krishna will make all the arrangements. Honesty is natural. It's natural. It's a quality of goodness. It's a quality of saintliness. It's a quality of transparency. It's a quality of being trustworthy. Therefore, the Vaishnava's honesty is important, because if we are not honest, who will take this message of Krishna consciousness? Who will trust us? And if they don't trust us, they won't trust what we have to say either. This Bhagavad Gita is the truth. You? I mean, you're a professional liar. Come on, you know. Okay, I've learned one thing today. If anything is the truth, it cannot be what you're saying. Right? That I know for sure. Right? Therefore, this honesty is essential, that we are transparent. Arjavam. A devotee is arjavam, very simple. Simple because if you ask him, what's your secret? He'll tell you straight away. He'll tell you the secret. So this is my secret. So this is it, you know. Because I have nothing to hide. Yeah? You can know. Nothing to hide. He has nothing to hide. And if one takes that position, that there is nothing to hide, then there can be no sinful activities. There can be no skeletons in the closet. But then, if there's nothing to hide, oh, how nice is life. How simple is life. No facade, you know, no mask. Just be as you are. Satyakama Jabala. There's the Jabala Upanishad. A whole Upanishad is dedicated to Satyakama Jabala, who went to Gautama Muni and asked to become his student, and Gautama said, "What is your gotra? What is your family lineage?" "I don't know." "Who is your father?" "I don't know." "Ask your mother." He went to his mother. He came back. He says, "My mother also doesn't know." Then Gautama Muni said, "You are a Brahmana. No one would have spoken the truth but for a Brahmana. Such an unfavorable truth. Everyone would have, you know, tried to sort of at least present it a little different. Well, you know, I mean, my mother suffers from amnesia." You know, so that's the reason why she can't remember. Right? In some way or other, you try and sort of speak the truth, but present it just a little better, you know, a little better, but not such a karma. No, as it was. And Gautama Muni said, "You are a Brahmana. You have the qualities of a Brahmana." So, Brahmana means Vaishnav must automatically be Brahmana, because they're parallel. The mode of goodness is parallel to transcendence. It is a pure reflection of the spiritual standard of spiritual behavior. And therefore, the qualities of goodness and honesty must be there for the Vaishnava. So, although we are transcendental to Dharma, generally we will follow Dharma, because Dharma is wonderful, because Dharma is the way of the spiritual world. But whether we would have sent away Sita just because some guy, you know, like some low class person is saying, you know, like, whether we would have done that, I don't know. But if you're the king, what can you do? When people don't trust the king, then the kingdom is finished, because then no one will listen to the king. The king is so respected. You know, we don't understand what it means to be a king. No idea. I was, somehow or other, I became temple president of Vrindavan. And then, at one point, every day at about 6 in the morning, someone would knock on the door of my room, and I'd open the door, and there's Radha Govinda Swami. And he would fall on the ground and offer obeisances. So, me too, you know. And I go, "Maharaj, please, you know, Maharaj, no, what are you doing? Don't do that." And like, no, he said, no, it's my duty. And then he'd go away. The next day he'd come back, do the same thing. For a whole week, he'd come every day to my door, knock on the door and pay obeisances. Then finally I say, "Maharaj, please, I mean, Maharaj, why are you coming like this and doing this, Maharaj, please?" He says, "No, it's my duty." He said, "After all, you are our father." And he never thought of it like that, you know. I was like shocked, you know. I never thought of myself as his father, you know what I mean? I'm his father. What does he mean, I'm his father? But, I mean, he got me thinking like anything, and I realized, this is amazing, he's basically telling me I should be like a father, the father of all, because, you know, the king, the president, he's the father of everyone, a well-wisher who is kind and wise, an example to all, an inspiration, someone who is just so inspiring in his example that you just want to follow him, who takes care of you, and then whether he punishes you or whether you accept it. Because it's, oh no, I deserve it. I mean, he's my father, my noble father. And I said, geez, God, I thought I just had to sign some checks, you know, and I had to sort of like sit in a few meetings and like a sort of, you know, talk about the roles and the responsibilities, you know, and all these kind of things, the strategies, the policies. And I thought, you know, I just had to sort of pick up a management book, you know, like be in, but now I had to be a father, you know. God, tell us something else, you know. Well, so that's what it is. So this Dharma is essential to us, because without it, how will our movement be a success? And therefore, without Lord Ramachandra, and without appreciating him deeply, how will our movement be a success? And yet, we are Krishna Bhaktas. He is our Ishtadev. And yet, we are sometimes transcendental to that Dharma. Okay, I'll end in that way, since it's almost time. And see if there are any questions or comments.